Thank you. My name is Susan, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. It is, if your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, Phil and Dino, have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and understanding. Lauren will read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Lauren. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Thank you.
Please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God, Jill will read the steps.
Hi, I'm Jill. I'm an alcoholic. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Step seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Step eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, make direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Step 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Annette will read the traditions.
Hi, I'm Annette. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Okay. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there's but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought never to be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never to be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Leah.
Woo! Hi, my name's Leah. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, I'm so happy to be here. My sober date is August 30th, 2007, so I just have a little over 2 years, and I'm very happy that Debbie didn't ask me to speak sooner, because over the last year, I feel like I've gotten to know all of you through my service commitment, which is coffee in the other room. And I just feel like I'm surrounded by love. So it's like the perfect time, I feel, to be doing this. And I'm nervous because there's 500 people or 400 people. But really, bottom line, it's just like my AA story. So I'm from New Jersey, South Jersey, near Philadelphia. And everything was sort of like status quo. You know, I went to Quaker schools and Montessori schools and wore my hair in pigtails and stuff. And then my parents sent me away to school in Philadelphia when I was in fifth grade. And that was really, I feel like, the beginning of, I would say, like my leash got longer with my parents. And they just really weren't monitoring what I was doing. And if they did, they, like, heard it from me. And I just started drinking really early. I got into a very difficult crowd at that school, and we were drinking beer in the middle of the day. And one of the things that my sponsor jokes about with me, because I wasn't sure if I was an alcoholic when I got in here, is that I had a liquor locker. And, you know, I had one locker for books and another locker, and there were, like, at least 20 bottles of alcohol that I had stolen from my parents' basement. And I didn't think that was, like, a problem. But that's what I feel like alcoholism is, like, all about. I just have to say I'm so glad Kareth is here next to me. It's true, because we counted days together, and that means a lot to me. So, anyway, drinking, party. I was, like, thinking about it. There's not much to say, you know. Bad boys with stolen vehicles. You know, I don't think my story is that unique. I think what was interesting is that I came from a very good family, and I had everything. It was like a silver spoon was put in my mouth. And even with all of that, like food on, you know, the table every night, like great food with my mother and money in my pocket, like it didn't make a difference. I was just like irritable and discontent constantly. And I really like ran the household, you know, with an iron fist. And so that's like, take me to 18, I went to school in Atlanta. And when I went to school in Atlanta, it was really like, got really bad. I mean, I didn't have to come home at night. You know, there was nothing sort of, you know, like no structure at all. And I started drinking at like 11 o'clock and going out for drinks at you know, for lunch and stuff. And I stopped going to school. And after 2 years of that, I knew, I was 20 at the time, I knew this is a problem. You know, my life is going nowhere. And I'm not studying, I'm not doing anything. And I knew I couldn't go back. And so I said to somebody, he said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, I'd love to do design and business. And he said, well, there's a school in New York City that offers that. And within a week, I mean, I really think my higher power was looking out for me then. I got into a school here in New York City, and I moved here in like 10 days. And that was like, in my 20s, I would say that it wasn't as much of me completely partying. It was me sort of medicating my feelings. That's how I would sort of describe it. Like I'm kind of I call myself a high bottom drunk, and what that means was that there weren't a lot of consequences and yets. You know, I had an apartment, I was going to school, I had all that outside stuff. But you know, God forbid I had feelings that I couldn't deal with, I was drinking. I mean, it was the first thing I thought of all the time. And I mean, to be honest, I still think sometimes about it. It doesn't completely go away. And so that's sort of my 20s. And it was really, you know, specifically, I would say it was around dating. And you know, I was kind of good at business and I was good at all that outside stuff. But whenever I got really close to somebody and that level of intimacy, I couldn't handle it. And I would just start drinking. And I would drink alone. I would drink with the people. That's how I dealt with it. And I really didn't think anything of it. Like, I just didn't think it was a problem. In my late 20s, I got into Al-Anon. And because somebody I was dating was in it, and that's kind of what I did. I sort of followed people around. And I didn't get serious about that program for 7 years. But it was the best thing that I ever did. Because it was sort of just talking to my Al-Anon sponsor that was... it was sort of an entree to AA. And I think my higher power needed that leveling of my pride or something, because there was just no way I was going to Alcoholics Anonymous, like, straight off the bat. There was no way I was going to call myself an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic. That's, you know, but in doing my steps in that program, thanks, Kareth. Gosh, it does so quick. I realized that, you know, especially around dating, that I had a lot of instances where, I would drink before I met up with somebody, or I would drink on the date excessively. And my sponsor in that program said, you might want to look at that. And I, you know, honestly, I didn't want to look at it. And I was, you know, a couple years later, she was sponsoring me for a couple years, and I got really sick, and I had a hard time leaving the apartment. And I said to my higher power, I was like, why would you get me this sick? Like, I'm, you know, mid-30s, this is like the prime of my life, and I can barely leave my apartment. And, you know, it was like begging for an answer. Because at that point, I was lucky I had a relationship with my higher power. And what I heard completely clearly was that, because you're an alcoholic. And it didn't make any sense to me at the time. Like, okay, you made me sick. But I think my higher power just, like, needed me, because I was like full speed ahead with everything. I needed to just take a chill pill and get into recovery and focus my life on this right now. And so I started counting days a couple years ago, and I'm lucky that I counted them with Kareth. And I just want to say, like, it makes me think about, like, the buddies and the friends that I've made in this program. And if it wasn't for all of those, like, my relationship with my sponsor, Felicia, and the people in these rooms, like, I couldn't have done it alone, because I just have, like, way too much pride. I have way too much fear. You know, I have a pretty good life outside of here, so I didn't really, you know, feel like, you know, my life was a mess or anything like that. And I had a lot of outside help, and I could have avoided the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time, but all I have to say is I'm completely glad that I didn't, because Alcoholics Anonymous has given me, and it sounds like such a cliche, but I really, you know, and as I know beginners, like when I was a beginner, I would hear, really, like a life beyond your wildest dreams. It sounds like such a cliche, but it's not. It's like, through getting sponsored and doing the steps and showing up at these meetings and being of service to people and this program. Like, I have a sponsee, she says, well, why do I have to get a service commitment? I was like, because AA doesn't, like, run on its own, and we want to give back. And I love my service commitments. I have another commitment, and I think my higher power gave me that commitment before this one, because it's speaking, so it kind of, like, prepared me to speak in front of you guys. But has given me, it's a weird life, like, it's not like I expected this life to happen, but I have people in my life that I really love. Like, it's like, and I said to somebody recently, it's like love that I didn't even know existed. You know what I mean? Like, I would, and I'm one of those people that would watch, I think you guys know that show Seventh Heaven, and I would be like, oh, that's the way, like, people are supposed to relate to each other. Like, because I had no idea how to relate, and I was addicted to watching that show, because the family was so nice to each other, anyway, I feel like I have that now, and I'm just so grateful for having a relationship with my higher power. Trying to think of anything else. I don't, do I? I'm just going to sit for a second. I guess what I would say, I heard this in a meeting last night to the newcomer, is to just give it a chance. Because you know, and be open to the change, because it's a big change. Like AA is a big change. Like you know, you kind of can't have the same friends if they're drinking and partying, and it is a really big adjustment. But if you can, to try and embrace it and know, like, if I'm 2 years in, okay, this is what I'm me 2 years, and I would say the first year was like a little rocky because you're figuring out like sponsorship and how do I talk to my sponsor and what do we talk about and how do I do my steps, and you know, there was a lot of like sort of learning of AA. And then I feel like in year two, I was able to learn what I had, you know, apply what I had learned into my life. 1 minute. And now all of a sudden I feel like I'm finally building a life. And it takes time. So, I don't know, hang in there. And I really love all of you guys very deeply. And I really appreciate all your support and your smiles and your hellos. So thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Rob.
Hi, I'm Rob. I'm an alcoholic. My sponsor is Mark B. I got sober October 13, 2005. Thank you. I'm reworking the steps with Mark. I'm on step 8. And my home group is the Atlantic Group. I like to tell on myself when I start to speak that I generally want to come up here and sound good. I want to, my ego gets the best of me. I want to sound good, and I want to, I just want to be validated by you guys. And I want to, my ego blocks me from what my purpose is, and my purpose is to help someone and be honest. So I'm going to try to do that to the best of my ability. 4 years ago, I remember on Columbus Day in 2005, I had been to a therapist and basically was made aware that I had trouble with alcohol and other things. And I basically, you know, I knew better than everyone at that time. And, you know, you really couldn't tell me anything, you know. I was pretty much on my own, you know. You really couldn't tell me anything, you know. I lived by these sort of rules that I had learned as a younger man or a child that I started to live by that really didn't work out for me very well. I didn't really have good coping skills. I really could not face emotions, positive or negative, really. I mean, I thought I could. But the truth of the matter is I learned that after in recovery. If you're new, welcome to recovery, by the way. Recovery is, I mean, this is where it's at. I mean, you're in recovery. If you're in here, hopefully, if you have a problem with alcohol or other things, you're basically coming through the door. And that's pretty much part of the first step, I believe, to a certain degree. Because you're saying, like, I need help, you know, I need to change what I'm doing, and it's not drive-through. It takes some work and it takes some time, but you're really in a place that I found that really helped me in my life to an amazing degree. Because I had difficulty sort of living in the question of life, not having the answers, not knowing certain things. And what the big book did for me, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous did for me, was sort of give me these rules to live by and filled in the blanks, and sort of, I felt like my wires were crossed. When I ended up in a rehab in Pennsylvania, I felt like I just had some wires crossed. I need to straighten these things out in order to be happy. I grew up in New Jersey and Queens. My folks were divorced when I was 2. I was raised by my mom. Some of the events, I remember my grandfather on my mom's side was killed by a drunk driver. Ironically enough, you know, I've driven drunk. You know, I remember I was on a One summer I lived out in Los Angeles and I worked in the amphitheater and I borrowed my uncle's car and I just remember I was so intoxicated that I just kept hitting those reflectors. In Los Angeles they have reflectors in the middle of the freeways because there's no snow to plow, so they have reflectors to help you see at night. And I just trying to stay in between the reflectors, but I just couldn't. You know, I'm an alcoholic, and that's the truth of the matter. When I came in, I did not think I was an alcoholic. I just wanted to stop all the consequences that were going wrong in my life. I was in a relationship. I was in a very short marriage that was just on its way out. And at that point, I was in so much pain that I had to ask for help. I went to a rehab down in Pennsylvania. And I just realized that whatever I was doing was not working. I remember walking around, I used to be very tense when I'd get emotional or something, and I'd just be tense. I remember I'd walk around and I'd be so tense, I didn't know how to process emotion. I think that was the biggest thing. In college, we had a keg refrigerator, and we all went out, and we just got so drunk. Some security guys from the school followed us, and they wrote down everything we had done. And there was pretty public urination from our group, joking around. There's all kinds of stuff. I mean, I'm really not proud of it. The truth of the matter is, I did not get to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous due to my virtues. I came here because, you know, I was a partier and I wanted to party, and just to feel good. I didn't realize that I was really destroying myself and those around me. So let me get into some solution. I remember I had met my first sponsor, and he was calling me in rehab, and I was avoiding his phone calls. That's like someone throwing you like from a boat, like one of those life preservers or something. You're like, no, please, this is fine. So, you know, I was avoiding his calls, but this was somebody who, you know, was just trying to spread the message. And you know, I did what I was told in here. I didn't want to do much of the things that were suggested of me. I didn't like being told what to do. I had a problem with authority. And luckily, I had enough pain in my life to give me the gift of trying to change. If you're new and you don't have a sponsor, there's people on the side who can help you find one that, you know, to just get things going. I was so unique and different that I needed the best sponsor, and I needed to pick him. And the truth of the matter is that my choices really weren't working out for me, and I'd start listening to somebody else. I started to do the steps to the best of my ability, honestly, which is not something that came easy for me. I did not have the ability to trust others. That did not come easily for me. And I slowly started to get better. And I did the steps, and I felt, you know, I felt a weight lifted off my shoulders when I did 4 and 5. Even though, like, when I read those steps, they seemed impossible, like that it wouldn't really work for me. I just doubted it. You know, I doubted all the positivity in the big book. I was like, you know, and it's funny, when I came in, I read those promises on the bottom of 83, and I said, I didn't have any of the promises. All I had was pain. You know, my perception of my life was pain. And today, I around 9 to 11 promises, if I'm honest with myself, I generally have. So that's definite improvement. I was walking uptown on the west side with my sponsee, and we're walking around, and people, this is 2 years into recovery, and people are walking by me, and they're nodding at me. They're like, yeah, they're like pointing at me, nodding, and I'm telling my sponsee on the west side, wow, this this recovery works so well. You know, I mean, can you, like, I'm just feeling like I'm on top of the world. Feeling all pride-filled, and I'm telling, telling myself how great I am and whatnot, and I go to the restroom, and this fake turtleneck collar that I had inside out had a white tag on it, and I guess I looked like I was a priest or something. My perception of life is rarely what it really is. You know, my life today is very simple. It's wonderful. I'm really grateful. I have a wonderful girlfriend. I'm in a great relationship. I'm present for life in a manner that I did not know how to do. One of the great gifts I like is being able to have uncomfortable conversations. Life has them. And being able to be present for that and have them not run. But truth be told is that I need these meetings. I have feelings, and I need a huge group of people to help me deal with them. That's, you know, I need to come to meetings. And I've found solution here, and I'm grateful to be here. Thank you all for my sobriety.